Hi there, and welcome to Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. If you've been following along, you'll know just about where we're at in the book of Romans as we continue our journey through this amazing book. In light of that, for those of you who are astute enough, please don't touch the dial. Stay right there. I know that today's program is going to be a challenge for some of us, but it is a godly challenge and a good one. This one comes from Scripture. Join us as we take a look at giving that pleases God. Chapter 15 of Romans is where we're at. We catch up with Pastor Chris Gordon here in verses 22 through 33. Pastor Chris now with today's broadcast of Abounding Grace.
Verse 22. But now, since I no longer have any room for work in these regions. That is really a remarkable statement. Do you hear what he just said? I fulfilled it. I'm done. I did my job. I fulfilled my calling to the Gentiles. I'm done with these regions, Asia, Macedonia, Greece. He, notice here, this Macedonia and Greece is the emphasis. He just gave his ministry plans. But I love to think about for a moment this beautiful thing that he fulfilled the calling God gave him. You ever think about how important that is to say? You remember Paul would say to the Ephesian elders, I didn't shun from teaching you all these 3 years the whole counsel of God. I did what I was called to do. We really do see a kind of servant's heart here, and you see the heart that this man has for people, because now he lays before them his plans, that's saying, I've longed to come to you in Rome. I hope to see you in passing as I go to Spain. And then he tells them in verse 25 that before he can come to them, he first has to go to Jerusalem. Now, why is he telling them all this? Why kind of raise the hopes and say, well, I'm going to see you in passing, but first I got to go to Jerusalem, then I'll get to you. We know that the Lord gave Paul this specific mission. But here's the heart. Paul went where he knew God was calling him to go. And he so believed in that calling that it was so specifically defined by the Lord that he had to fulfill it exactly as the Lord had determined it. We move when God makes that clear to us. We go when he wants us to go. And that was very important for the church in Rome to understand. Churches need to understand this. Every servant must have that. It's a servant's heart that understands that this is a ministry of God sending and taking and sending and taking. It ultimately, sure, he works with our desires and he works with who we are, but ultimately it's him. I told you when I was wrestling with the call here, I went through a period of intense turmoil, especially as I had prayed, you know, I'll go to Escondido, and then he gave me the answer and I fought it. I did not want to go. And then it was opened up. As soon as I got here and started ministering, I knew this is where the Lord had me. It's been the greatest blessing. I love being here. I have not looked back. But my point here as I raise that is people didn't understand that whole process. You wouldn't believe all the different things that were said to me in the whole pastoral call process. One person, a dear brother, who really struggled and wrote me and says, you know, you've said to us, you've said, you tell us not to leave a church and you leave a church. It was hard. It was really hard for me. It was hard for all of us just to leave. But at the end of the day, what was it? What was it that moves a pastor and these things happen? It was because God had given that call. And I had been firmly convinced of that. This is important for a church to understand. Why is it so important? Because we don't understand the complexity that goes on in the sending of a pastor. Have you ever thought about how much work the Lord really does for his church? I'm not saying it's hard for him. I want you to think about the amazing detailed work the Lord does for his church. Look at this big world, boys and girls. He has his church spread throughout the face of the earth. You recognize all the detail, all the care over the face of the world. He is constantly raising up and training servants to be sent out to go. they go when he says. And the Lord gives each one specific personalities and specific gifts that he knew beforehand. Think of Jeremiah in the womb. He knew beforehand, and he prepared them to be specifically sent to a people that they would fit with. I used to pray in seminary for the church that I never saw that the Lord would send me to. Who would it be? What would it look like? A particular assignment given, and all of the different needs. Think about all the different nations spread about on the face of the earth, and think of all the different needs and all the different hardships and dangers and afflictions in certain parts of the world, and all the challenges that encompass this great ministry of the gospel going out to the nations. Do you ever stop and think about what a wondrous work it is that God sends a servant? It's incredibly complex. We could never fit that together. It's a puzzle we could never complete. It's really beautiful. When you think about the church spread over the face of the earth, and a particular man is placed here, and a particular man is sent there to fit the people, it's overwhelming when you think about how much work actually goes into this. And the Lord never wanted the churches to take that for granted. This is why Jesus said, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send. Sending requires a lot of thought. Sending requires a lot of work to go into a man, because pastors are pieces of work. And it takes a lot of crafting. And churches who don't understand this can learn the hard way. They can learn the hard way. Apostle Paul essentially is saying to this church, dear church, dear church in Rome, dear brothers and sisters, this is the reason I haven't been able to come. My calling, my gifts, where the Lord sent me, were needed at a specific place, at a specific time. The need there was so great that the goal's almost there. I want to get to you. I want to get to you. But I first have to go to Jerusalem. Now, why is Paul saying that? He's concerned to know that they would understand that he loved this church. I think every pastor should communicate that. I know as pastors we fail. But I do. I have an affection and love for this church. It should be communicated. That's healthy. Paul wanted them to understand he loved them. He was excited that God had raised up a church in Rome. And what a wonderful thing when I look at a church and think God specifically raised up that church and those people and fitted them all together as a glorious body, part of the glorious body of Christ, of living stones being built up. But he gave you this community and formed you and fitted you together. And Paul wanted them to understand this main point tonight. He wanted them to understand how integral that church was to his ministry. We could ask this: is the Escondido URC really significant in the whole picture of Christ's kingdom and work? Tonight, we don't feel it. You sit here and you think, are we really that significant? Does it really matter what we're doing? You know what Paul would have said? Yes! You are very significant. You're a church of Jesus Christ. He built you. So what does Paul do then at this point? He begins to encourage them. Look at what he says. When I go to Spain, I want to see you in passing to be helped on my journey there by you. Once I have enjoyed your fellowship, your company for a while. It's really fascinating. If you were to kind of link this up with chapter one, it really does. It's almost, there's a break in the sentence. It almost fits right together with chapter one. It's as if he picked it right back up from chapter one after all the instruction. And he said, remember what he said back in chapter one, I long to see you that I may impart to you some spiritual gift to strengthen you. I want to give something to you to strengthen you. That is, that we may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith, both yours and mine. I want you to notice the mutual emphasis that Paul keeps giving here in chapter one and now back at the end. It's mutual. It's mutual. I'm going to give you something. I want you to know I'm sent to give you something, but I need you too. That as that happens, there would be mutual strengthening, mutual encouragement. Why do I love this tonight? Because Paul never viewed the ministry only as the ordained servants doing all the work by the, while the people were only, and I emphasize, yes, you are receivers, receivers of something wonderful, only receivers and only spectators. In other words, he's telling them that the servants that God raises up need each other. They need the church. They can't do the ministry without the church. There is no ministry without the church. There is no sending and going without them. I want to strengthen you. That's my goal, says Paul. Then he says something really important in verse 24. I need to be helped on my journey there by you. I need assistance. The word is important. The word could mean a whole bunch of kind of helps. Paul is asking this church, this is a specific request. He's asking this church to help him forward toward the goal. Now that he's leaving the Macedonia region, his home church couldn't do it. His home church in Antioch couldn't continue to be a supporting church. So he's saying, I need you to do it. You see how important that is to the cause of the whole, the church is. In one request, this is the Apostle Paul. He's looking at a church he's never seen, way out in Rome, and he's saying, I need you to keep me going in the greatest cause that God has ever given to man. Think about how remarkable this request is. Do you ever think about the effect of one faithful gospel preacher? Have you ever thought about the effect of one faithful gospel preacher? I mean faithful. How much effect that has on people? How many children converted? How many souls pulled out of the fire? How many people rescued? What's the price on that? What's the price on that? You know, I think about all the encouragement that I had along the way. People who are dead and gone now. Bob Dindulk. Bob Dindulk, I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for Bob Dindulk. God used servants. The Christian Reformed Church paid a chunk of my seminary education, and I didn't have to pay it back. We have a seminary in our backyard. Hundreds of pastors have gone out into the world to preach. Who are recipients of my ministry? It's you, people in Linden. How do you really help forward people? Do you see this helping forward is the word here? How do you help forward people? Paul wants you to know you're a part of this. You are an integral part of this. There is a whole warfare going on here and out there. And in the midst of that, God is raising up and sending preachers. And he does this for your benefit. He does this for those people in glory one day that you don't see right now that you'll see. Jesus said, this gospel will be preached as all the world is a witness. Then the end will come. This is his plan. This is what he's doing. This is why you're here. He's evangelizing the world through you. And Paul encourages the church at this point. And I want you to notice how he encourages the church. He says, then, dear brothers and sisters, you need to understand your giving for the gospel is how this happens. Your giving for the gospel is how this happens. Look at verse 25. At present, however, I'm going to Jerusalem bringing aid to the saints. For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make some contribution for the poor among the saints at Jerusalem. They were pleased to do it, and indeed they owe it to them. For if the Gentiles have come to share in their spiritual blessings, they ought also to be of service to them in material blessings. You know, we talked about tonight, you say, Lord, give us this day our daily bread. How does he do that? He just said it through you. It's It's an amazing section. The Gentile churches in Macedonia and Achaia took up an offering for this poor church in Jerusalem. The Jews were very poor in Jerusalem. And Paul sees that as, whoa, that's a barrier breaker. The Gentiles taking up an offering for the Jews in Jerusalem, who they don't even know, and who there's been this? I'm going first to Jerusalem, says Paul, to minister to them because of the generosity of the Gentile churches. I am so excited to minister the gift of God's people to the Jews, the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem. In fact, the churches in Macedonia were such an encouragement to Paul. He used them to really, in a roundabout way, convict Corinth. Corinth was a wealthy church, and these poor churches put to shame Corinth in their giving. Paul was excited about this. He was wanted to encourage the Roman church. I want you to see what's going on here. He needed it from them. He's asking it from them, and he's saying, this is what's going on in the churches abroad. You need to understand this. It's a sign of what we're a part of, and what marks a healthy church is a giving church. In fact, their giving was proof of their thankfulness for the gospel. These churches in Macedonia and Achaia were like the woman putting in her little mite in the treasury. They were poor and they gave abundantly. It meant more to them than all the riches. I'm convicted by it. There's a responsibility. Did you see it in verse 27? It pleased them to give, and they are debtors, for if the Gentiles have been partakers of their spiritual things, then their duty is to minister to them in material things. They owe it. Look at what they've been given. And here is where the root was. Here was where the tree was, you know. How much have you been given tonight? I've mentioned before, I know you guys have had faithful preachers. And if you look over the course of your life, you know, sitting under ministers who faithfully delivered the Christian gospel, there is a sense in which you're a debtor. The Lord's given you everything. But to those who don't have this, or to those who need this. And we have an opportunity in this city. I read an article not too long ago in Christianity Today, not always a beacon of light, but it was an article on hard economic times. And the article basically talked about why giving might be more stable in an economically hard time. And so it was a really intriguing article to me. The premise of the article was, if it is a faithful church, it was never sustained on the rich anyways. You think they're going to give more wealth if they're losing it? Give it away? It said this: when Americans earned less money following the Great Depression, they gave more. When the income went up, they began to give less of it away. Interesting, isn't it? I think it was James Boyce I was reading not too long ago on a study on giving, and he mentioned this. He says those in the U.S., those below the poverty line, give about 5% of their income to charitable causes. Those in the middle, slightly more, about 7%. But the highest bracket, 100,000 or more, guess how much? 2%. If the Lord stood here and looked over budgets, and it's so uncomfortable for a pastor to talk this. Have you ever seen those guys on TBN? I don't want to be that. But you've got to do it. It's all over the scriptures. And if the Lord stood and looked at budgets and priorities, what would he say? What would it reveal? And I speak to me. Are we giving for causes that are for the advancement of the gospel? Or are we giving for every little thing under the sun? What are priorities? When we print in the bulletin that we have needs and they're not met, is that a good witness? Even in that, you know what's amazing? The Lord doesn't take a hammer to us. He doesn't come and beat us over the head and say, you start giving. He doesn't do that. He says, you know, I want a cheerful giver. I want people who will give freely with a cheerful heart because they love what I've done for them. He could rain money from heaven. Wouldn't that be great, boys and girls? But he doesn't do that. He uses you. He uses his people to advance his gospel. You Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, this is in Macedonia, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent help for my needs once and again. Ministry doesn't go forward without you. It's a mystery. God doesn't advance this without the gifts of his people. So notice the two. The pastors need mutual encouragement from the church. They can't do it without the church. They're giving and you're giving. You give to continue this gospel ministry, but there's one other great way you can give. And that's how he closes this. What does he say? Notice there in verse 30. I appeal to you, brothers, by our Lord Jesus Christ and by the love of the Spirit, strive together with me in your prayers to God on my behalf, that I may be delivered from the unbelievers in Judea, and that my service for Jerusalem may be acceptable to the saints, so that by God's will I may come to you with joy and be refreshed in your company. May the God of peace be with you all. The final quality of a healthy, giving church is what? You're praying. Did you catch that? I plead with you, strive together with me. See the mutual again here? Mutual efforts, mutual working. Strive with me and do what? Pray. I need you to pray for me. I need you to pray for two reasons. Why do you need to pray tonight? Because there's so much opposition to this. You have no idea how great the opposition is. You have no idea the spiritual warfare that the ministry is under. You guys have no idea what's really going on behind the scenes here. You have no idea what the devil, he wants to get in here bad. He wants to disrupt this whole thing with some division, something the elders have to deal with that'll split the whole thing apart. He wants to come in. You've got false ideas, false doctrines. I need you to pray for the church. I need you to pray for the pastors. I need you to pray for the elders and the deacons, that we would do our job faithfully and that the devil would be kept far away. In the next section, the next chapter, what does he warn against? At the very end of the epistle, there's all these people causing divisions in the life of the church, contrary to the doctrine which you've learned. I need you to avoid them. Don't listen to them, which means all these people were listening to them. You know, the Lord opens and closes doors. But it's always fascinated me that Paul said to the Thessalonian church in 1 Thessalonians 2, we, brethren, having been taken away from you for a short time in presence, not in heart, endeavored more eagerly to see your face with great desire. Therefore, we wanted to come to you, even I, Paul, time and time again, but Satan hindered us. He's doing that. Satan's hindering. And the way Satan's hindering stops, guess what? It's through your prayers. I need you to pray for the warfare is fierce, and then I need you to pray for one other reason. I love what he says here, that my service would be acceptable to the saints. Pray for your pastors that their service would be acceptable. We are weak. Pray for your leaders that they'll be acceptable. Pray that the ministry would fit God's design and his will and not our own. Pray that his name would be glorified and his gospel preached sincerely. Pray that the design of it as God ordained it and when Christ gave that commission would be fulfilled. I always loved what Samuel said about Samuel when he was being ordained. And the Lord let none of his words fall to the ground. It's always been my favorite passage for ministry, asking the Lord if that would be the case. And the Lord wants you to know tonight, you're involved in it. You share in it.
This is Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Just enough time to leave you with our contact information. We'd love to hear from you. It's always a delight knowing you're being blessed by this radio program. Reach out to us at our website, agradio.org. Questions@agradio.org if you wish to email us any questions you might have or praise reports, comments about the program. Or give us a call, 888-504-8805. By the way, when you visit our website, agradio.org, tons of resource material for you to tap into, as well as links to our other platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Again, all at agradio.org. And that phone number, once again, is 888-504-8805. Looking to write to us? If you're old school, the address for your envelope is Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. Hey, thanks for joining us today. Until next time, God bless.
Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, this is Chris Gordon, pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. I'd like to invite you to our Sunday worship services at 9:30 a.m. and 5 o'clock p.m. on Sunday. We have two worship services, 9:30 a.m. and 5 o'clock p.m. We preach Christ and Him crucified with the goal that you would live in the joy of this comfort in the knowledge of the forgiveness of all of your sins. 1864 North Broadway is the address here in Escondido. We'd love to see you this Sunday.